Blog Talk Radio.
Macbeth, Act 4, Scene 1. Round the cauldron go, in the poison entrails throw, toad that under cold stone, days and nights hast 31. Sweltered venom sleeping got, boil thou first in the charmed pot, double-double toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. Fillet of a finny snake, in the cauldron boil and bake, eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and howlet's wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth boil and bubble, double-double toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, scale of dragon, tooth of wolf, witch's mummy, maw and gulf, of the ravened salt sea shark, root of hemlock digged in the dark, liver of blaspheming Jew, gall of goat and slips of ewe, silvered in the moon's eclipse, nose of Turk and Tartar's lips, finger of birth-strangled babe, ditch delivered by a drab, make the gruel thick in slab, and thereto a tiger's chaudron from the ingredients of our cauldron, double-double toil and trouble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble, good evening, welcome to another edition of Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. Might be the first time we've done that 2 weeks in a row. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
the guy who has no microphone on his computer no more. Technically from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One. Woo! And he also would, the fact that I knew my practice wife was, you know, illiterate. I'd figure that's where she came from with that poem you just read.
Yes. She may have been the first, our wives may have been the first ones to utter those words. And then Willie Shakespeare stole them from her.
Really, Shakespeare, yeah.
Willie. Yeah, well, what do you know?
Okay.
Well, you
I'm on
Willie.
I'm on Willie's side. I'm on Willie's side. That's fine.
I wanted to hang out with him, but you know what? Sometimes he just didn't know when a party wouldn't end. I mean, little Willie wouldn't go home.
That's right. He wouldn't.
But you can't push Willie around because Willie won't go.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't think he'd want to go today. We got some great stories about haunted houses, hence our title for tonight, Eerie Houses.
True, yes. You have a tale from the Black Mass, the Mole Mystery Theater. That's right, the shaving cream people, the brushless shaving cream people. And, of course, an amazing tale, not just from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, but from the mind of my favorite CBS writer, Bob Juren.
Another Bob Juren classic. Yeah, you've always said you like him the best. And Dave, you never let us down.
He's never let me down, that's for sure. Yeah.
And I don't think he'll let our listeners down either. Good old Bob. Thanks for going back into the archives and picking up those shows you missed earlier in the week. Yeah, this is a weekly, an annual tradition. I like to play hooky from my job during Halloween week, or in the case of a weekend, a little bit of a wrap around there, so we can bring you lots and lots of Halloween tales.
Yep, scary, spooky, screamy, six-toed, things like that, yeah.
I honestly, and I'm embarrassed to admit, I don't know how long you've been with us, good old Bob, but there is a show last year you need to catch. We did an all-music Halloween show, and I tell you what, I had a lot of fun on that one. Dave helped me dig up all the music, and I kind of made up little themed blocks to kind of put the breaks together with, and it came out really, really nice, I think.
Yep, it was a lot of fun, and Dale kept wanting to do this, and I didn't know how he was going to do it, so he found a bunch of songs, and I found a bunch of songs, and I shifted it over to him, and he put them together and said, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, we liked it so
amazing.
Much. We had so much fun. We did it again with a World War II block a few months later. You can always look in the archives if you like the old music from the 30s, 40s, 50s when these radio shows were very prominent. Then give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy the way we put those together.
You know, I'm thinking about when we talked about that kind of thing, just from shows. We ought to have a night where we just take music that was actually from radio shows and the different singers and the different bands from different shows, like Ray Noble and Billy Mills and Oscar. I want to say Oscar Peterson. That's not right. Oscar Levant and
yeah,
things
Oscar
like
Peterson's
that.
Pretty cool too, though.
Yeah. Yeah. But but you know, do the music from the variety shows, from, you know, and have some of those different groups there. So that might be on the horizon there. Now that we think about it,
I will lean on your expertise for that one, Dave, because you're definitely far more familiar with the content of the old shows than I am. I'm still playing. We've been doing this 5 years, and I'm still playing catch up. And I've learned so much from you and from Gar doing this show.
Yep.
And I said it before. I know it's a little early for Thanksgiving, but I'm ever so grateful to do shows with three great people. Now it's three. Three great, wonderful, knowledgeable people and fun people, all three of yous. And, you know, of course, I'm talking about the addition of CW, who...
Right. And of course, she's just...
become a semi-regular here.
She is so amazingly knowledgeable about movies and actors and actresses. It blows my mind to her knowledge.
Well, not only that, but television, comic books, and pulp magazines. She's got a very nice, broad knowledge of the genre. And I still say she's significantly younger than we are, which makes it even more amazing. The body
right,
knowledge.
Yes.
She has of stuff that seems to predate her. At least that's what I believe. If not, you've maintained a great set of pipes, lady.
It's like my brother, who's just like 3 years younger than I am, and when he would come back with things, because the things we grew up with, the radio shows and things like comedy bits and things like that, somebody came up and said, just how old are you? Because he knew
What? No, I was just going to say, we only start doing silent films.
Yeah, I remember listening to silent films. Yes, I do. Oh, wait. That doesn't work.
Hey, Fogsbane joined us as well. Right on time, my man. Right on time. As we've got three, count them, three wonderful horror haunted house tales.
You know, let me tell you something. I don't care where we start, but I'd like to end with the Mystery Theater. It's just such a good story. I'd really like to end with that.
You know what? Just to give everyone a chill before we send them off to bed, I think that's a wonderful idea. And with that being said, we should probably dabble with some Mole Mystery Theater first. A good story called The Beckoning Fair One.
Yeah, we've aired one or two of these before. I know we've done at least one. And initially sponsored by Sterling Drugs, manufacturers of Mole Brushless Shaving Cream, it became a Tuesday evening during prime time. It ran from 1943 to 1948. And changed its title in 1948 to the Mystery Theater, which has nothing to do with the ABC Mystery Theater.
And it's good stuff, stands on its own. A Mole Mystery Theater, this one is from?
June 5th of 1945.
Good evening. I'm Mr. Barrett, one of the characters in the Mole Mystery Theater, which follows right away. I just want to remind you that although next winter seems very far away, right now is the time to do something about next winter's heating problem. The government says that fuel of all types is going to be scarce, so if you want to keep warm, you should go to your dealer now and get whatever kind and quantity of fuel he can let you have. Also, you should check up on all your heating equipment and make sure that you're not wasting fuel. And lastly, protect your home against loss of heat by installing insulation and weather stripping. Those are the ways in which you can protect your home against next winter's cold.
And now, the Mole Mystery Theater, presented by M-O-L-L-E. Mole. The brushless shaving cream that guards your tender skin with its special protective film.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jeffrey Barnes welcoming you to the program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. Tonight we bring you an unusual tale of the supernatural by Oliver Onions entitled The Beckoning Fair One. It is a gripping study in human terror, the eerie story of a strange rebellion, and the terrible consequences that followed. So here it is, The Beckoning Fair One.
My name is Paul Oleron. I'll tell it from the beginning, just the way it happened. I don't ask you to believe it. Just listen. I was working on my new novel, Romilly, when I decided to move. I looked over a couple of places and finally discovered one I liked.
Of course, it's not a new house, Mr. Oleron, but we'll do the place over for you any color you like.
They're certainly quaint-looking rooms, aren't they? Plenty of atmosphere here.
You writers will have your atmosphere. Uh-huh. Are you sure you won't reconsider about taking the whole house, I mean?
Mm.
You never know who might rent the other floors, you know.
Well, if you don't mind my saying so, Mr. Barrett, you're not likely to have many people interested in living in this old relic.
Oh, it's not as bad as all that.
But I rather like the idea of being the only tenant in this venerable mansion.
Just as you like, Mr. Oleron.
Leave it to me, Mr. Barrett. I'll make my corner of it cozy enough.
I was thoroughly pleased with my new quarters. There was an air of ancient charm about the place that appealed to my imagination. Then I discovered the handle in the window seat. That meant there was a box underneath. But the lid was stuck. I went to work on it with mallet and chisel. Paneling rang and vibrated. The whole house seemed to echo. Finally, I loosened the lid and pried it out. I drew out something soft and yielding, covered with dust. It was some kind of a large bag, triangular in shape. It had wide flaps and buckles. I couldn't imagine what it had been used for. Soon lost interest in it, depositing it in a corner of the room. Then I set about removing a large nail from the bottom of the lid. I spent the rest of the afternoon putting my manuscripts into the box. In the evening, Elsie Bengo paid me a visit. Elsie worked on a newspaper, and she was always enthusiastic over my work, especially the new novel, Romilly.
Well, Elsie, what do you think of the place?
Oh, I don't know, Paul. I like the last place, in spite of the black ceiling and no water tap. How's Romilly coming?
Not very well.
Are you stuck?
Yep. Can't seem to get on with it.
Paul, would you like to read me some of it?
You don't understand, Elsie. I haven't done any more on it. Not a line.
Paul, you're joking.
Perfectly serious. I'm even considering scrapping the whole 15 chapters and starting over. Making Romilly a different type of woman.
You mean you're really going to scrap those 15 chapters?
You seem more concerned about it than I am.
Well, maybe I am. You've got what you've been working for almost within your reach. A novel that'll make you famous.
You have a lot of confidence in Romilly, don't you?
And now you just want to scrap the whole thing. Paul, it's unforgivable.
Oh, what's the difference, Elsie? The important thing is I'm happier here than I've been for a long time.
Thanks, Paul. I didn't mean to let you. It's just that... But I feel so close to Romilly. Paul, what's this thing in the corner here?
Suppose you tell me.
Why, it's a harp cover.
What?
It's a harp cover. It's been used to wrap up a harp before putting it into its case.
Oh, it must be a very old one. Well, thanks for solving my mystery.
Paul?
Hmm?
Paul, who lives in the rest of this house?
Nobody. I'm the only tenant.
Paul?
Yes?
May I tell you frankly what I feel about this place?
By all means.
You'll never work here.
Why on earth not?
I don't know why. But you'll never finish Romilly here.
That night, I sat by my fire, pondering over Elsie's prophecy. I looked around the room. It filled me with a sense of calm I'd never known before. The more I thought about Elsie Bengo, the more I became convinced I would have to destroy those 15 chapters. Unwittingly, I'd put too much of Elsie into my character of Romilly. And those qualities I disliked in Elsie Bengo, I found objectionable in Romilly. Then I became aware of the dripping water tap in the kitchen. It had a tinkling range of three notes on which it seemed to play a tune. In my mind's eye, I could see the gathering of each drop, the little tremble on the lip of the tap, and the tiny musical sound of its fall. I found myself waiting to hear each drop over and over again.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Oberon. Have a good night's sleep.
Oh, the best, Miss Grayson, the best. You sure I'm not putting you out any, asking you to come over every morning and get my breakfast?
I don't mind it a bit. What's a caretaker's wife for if not to take care of things?
Bum, bum, bum.
Do you hear me? But that's a very old tune, Mr. Oberon. I haven't heard it in 40 years.
Hmm? What tune?
Oh, the one you hum in. It's called The Beckoning Fair One.
Right. Sing it for me.
Dear me, I haven't got any voice, but if you want, it went something like this.
Very, very pretty.
They do say it was sung to a harp. The tune must be at least 100 years old.
And I was humming it?
Indeed you were.
This is odd. I thought I heard that tune last night, dripping from the kitchen faucet. Silly idea. A faucet singing. As time passed, I became more and more attached to my apartment. But Elsie Bengo did not share my enthusiasm.
It just doesn't belong to today at all, Paul. You know, this is a dead house. Everything in it reeks of decay.
That's all in the point of view, isn't it, Elsie?
Is Romilly coming any better?
I think she is. I'm laying the foundations of her new character. I'll begin the actual writing soon.
You mean you discarded the old Romilly?
Yes.
Oh, where's the manuscript?
In the window box. What do you want it for?
I want to read you something. Bring you back to your senses. Maybe you'll hear someone else read. Oh!
What's the matter, Elsie?
Nothing. I just cut my finger. You ought to take that nail out of the lid, Paul.
But I thought I did. Oh, here, let me bandage it.
Please don't worry about it, Paul. It's running over a scratch. Look, would you walk me down to the bus? It'll do you good to get out for a breath of fresh air.
I can't, Elsie. I really must get down to work.
No. No, that isn't why you won't go out. Oh, Paul, move out of here. Everything's wrong with this place.
Now, Elsie, please. Here, let me see you to the door.
My foot through.
Oh, you poor girl.
It's so funny.
Elsie.
First this nail and now this step. Oh, Lord, it's so funny.
Elsie, let me help you.
No, don't let me go.
Elsie.
Please let me go away. I'm not wanted here.
Alone that night before my fireplace, I found myself considering Elsie's accident. I thought I'd removed that nail from the lid of the window box. But then I couldn't be too certain I hadn't left a bit of it still in the wood. And the staircase was an old one. Though it seemed strong enough to me, the step might have collapsed under anybody. Poor Elsie simply happened to be the victim. Oh, my imagination was beginning to play tricks with me. I actually fancied I heard my name in the sound of the dripping water tap.
I laughed at myself. That's what came of too much thinking.
Suddenly, I stopped laughing.
heard a rustling sound. It seemed to be coming from the center of the room. For a moment, I couldn't identify it. It was a long, sweeping sound. Faint cracking in it.
What is it? What's there? Who's there? That sound. It's a woman combing her hair. I've got to get out of here.
I fled the house. I walked for hours in the cold, clear night. Gradually, my fear left me. I began to laugh at myself. Why, of course I hadn't removed that nail. Of course the wood in that step had been rotted through. As for the invisible woman brushing her hair, I'd been dreaming too much, that was all. It was morning by the time I got back to the house. I hadn't been to bed at all. I was tired. I found Mrs. Grayson, the caretaker's wife, waiting for me in my room.
I took the liberty of coming in, Mr. Oran, seeing as the door was open and you weren't home.
I've been out for a walk. You needn't bother about breakfast this morning, Mrs. Grayson. I'm not hungry.
From now on, Mr. Oran, you'll have to make other arrangements for getting your breakfast.
What?
I won't be setting foot inside your door again.
Well, why? What's the matter?
I'm a respectable woman, and I'll not be serving a man who makes a habit of entertaining ladies in his room.
Ladies?
I'll make your bed for you this last time.
Make up my bed? That's a good one. I haven't been to bed yet. I haven't been here all night.
No. Well, somebody spent the night here, Mr. Oleron, because your bed's been slept in.
Someone's been sleeping in my bed.
But somebody's been sleeping in my bed, and she's still there, and I'm not.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to figure out what's going on with this this creepy house here and the mystery sleeper.
Yes. You know, there could be lots of reasons for it, but none of them are any good.
Yeah, I'd be very disturbed about somebody sleeping in my bed without me being aware of it. That would be, yeah, not.
I understand that.
Dale not happy.
Dale not happy.
With weird people sleeping in my bed. I should be the only weird person in my bed.
That's right. And, you know, you don't even get to charge them rent that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. Let's get this thing right.
Yes. I like that expression in the show, too. Everything reeks of DK. My initials. Whew. My eyes are burning. As we celebrate Halloween week, this is day three. We're right about in the middle of it.
Yes, we are. And we got
so much
all kinds of spooky, eerie houses tonight. And this one plays the piano and sleeps in your bed when you don't.
Yes.
And they didn't make the bed. I mean, not that I make the bed, because I don't, but hey, you know.
You'd think the ghosts would have the decency to make the bed, though.
Or not leave an impression, one or the other, you know?
Yeah. The nerve of some ghosts, I'll tell you.
I would think the ghosts would just float over the bed. They wouldn't actually leave an impression. They just float over the bed.
How much weight?
And, no, they don't even need a bed. They already have their own sheet, you know?
Yeah, I don't like it when they sheet the bed.
Yeah.
That's never good.
Yeah, and you wouldn't get short sheeted if the best ghost was in the bed with you, you know?
Yep. That's true.
Matter of fact, you could short-sheet the ghost. That would be cool.
Yeah, it might be a little embarrassing. You never know what's under those sheets.
Yeah, like nothing. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. That's like even more exposed than nudity. Poor ghost.
Something like that, yeah.
The things ghosts have to deal with. I mean, it's not enough that they're dead.
They got to be running around, and they're all together under the sheet.
And they're all together.
Sheet.
I always thought that a weird expression, yeah, but a weird expression.
Yeah.
And they're all together.
I still use a lot of weird, old, archaic expressions. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a weird, old, archaic guy.
Could be.
No, that's not possible.
No. Yeah. We're getting as old as some of these radio shows we present. Actually, we're older than some of these radio shows we present. Uh-oh.
That is true. One of them is coming up later, which we're going to end the night with a really, really good story from Radio Mystery Theater.
Two of our three stories were made in our own lifetime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Black Mass isn't that old either, is it?
Yeah, Black Mass is from the 60s, yeah.
Yeah. So, good God, we're old. You can tell when everybody you grew up with on the television and radio is passing away. Cleveland just lost a longtime broadcaster, Mike Trevisano, controversial guy, kind of a shock jock to some degree, but all talk radio.
Yeah, and he got the job by calling into Pete Franklin all the time. And Pete Franklin labeled him the name Mr. Know-It-All. And when Pete Franklin left Cleveland for, I think it was California, is that where he went out to? San Diego, something like that? Anyway, when he left, they brought in Trev to try him out. And the guy certainly said his opinions and his thoughts and his ideas and people responded, whether in kind or in not so kind, people responded.
Yeah. Either to rattle his cage or to have their cage rattled or to maybe even agree with him from time to time, but, started out doing mostly sports and then broadened out into, politics and other current events. So, he will be missed. Obviously, he had a large listening audience, partly due to being on a very powerful station, partly due to his skills, I would say. But in any event, goodbye, Triv, and thanks for all the Cleveland memories. Just another Cleveland legend leaves us off to the great void.
Yep. Same station where Gary D. and worked in...
Don Imus.
So yeah, quite a bit of history. One of the older stations in Cleveland originally was WTAM. Then they changed for whatever. I think it was maybe in the 70s, maybe in the 60s or 70s. They changed it to WWWE3WE, and then they changed it. But then when they changed it back to TAM, I didn't know it had been WTAM originally. I said, why would you change the iconic name like WWWE? But that was the name it was changed to. They just changed it back to the original.
Yes. And they went back to Wattam.
Wattam.
But I'll tell you
which
one
was
thing.
A darn good. Back to Wattam was a darn good John Wayne movie too, I must say.
Yes. Up there with Hondo. Which is Al Bundy's favorite John Wayne movie. but The Quiet Man is currently my favorite. In any event, one thing about as talented as all those Cleveland area broadcasters were, and as lengthy as their careers were, one thing they never did was play old-time radio shows like we're doing for you tonight as we complete the beckoning fair. See, maybe we'll carve our place in... whatever. The beckoning fair one from Mole Mystery Theater. We'll be back after this.
And now back to Jeffrey Barnes and Act Two of The Beckoning Fair One.
Paul Oleron Reiter had not been in his new living quarters long before strange things began to happen. Nails put themselves back into the wood. A leaking water tap played an old tune. And an invisible woman appalled Oleron's soul by combing her hair. He has just returned to his rooms after spending the night walking the streets and contemplating the beckoning fair one.
I looked at the rumpled bed. The sheets bore a distinct impression as if somebody had lain on them. I knew that I hadn't been near the bed since Mrs. Grayson had made it the day before. I was face to face with it now. Something inhabited my room. But what? I was seized with a desire to know the thing, find out what it was. I lay down on the bed and tried to figure it out. It was becoming clear to me now that the key lay in my half-written novel, Romilly. Or rather, in both Romillys, the old one and the proposed new one. Looking back over it, I realized there was almost passionate hatred in the way the new Romilly had supplanted the old. And somehow, all this was related to Elsie Bendo. One thing was certain. Elsie must not come inside this house again. That afternoon, I saw her coming up the walk. I hurried to meet her outside.
I'm sorry, Elsie. I'm just going out. I've got an appointment downtown. You want to walk along with me?
Paul, you haven't any appointments. You just don't want me in the house. Well, I only wanted to tell you that everything's over between us.
Well, Elsie.
Let me finish, Paul. Something strange is happening to you.
Please, Elsie.
But if you ever... If you ever need me, Paul, somehow I'll know it. And then I'll come.
Sorry to bother you so late, Mr. Barrett. There's something I've got to ask you.
Oh, glad to be of help, I can.
As renting agent for the house, you'd know something about the previous tenant, wouldn't you?
Yes. The last tenant in your rooms was an artist by the name of Madley. He seldom went out of the place. As a matter of fact, Madley died there under rather peculiar circumstances.
Yes?
It was discovered at the post-mortem that there wasn't a particle of food in his stomach.
Starved to death?
No, he starved to death, all right. Only it wasn't because he didn't have any money. You see, they found a bank book in his room proving he had $10,000 in a New York bank.
Suicide, then?
By starvation? Hmm? It's rather an uncommon form of suicide, isn't it?
Then why? Why?
I don't know, Mr. O'Ron. Nobody ever found out.
I returned to the house. That there was a strange presence there, I was convinced. And now that I'd rid myself of Elsie Bengo, who'd been the old inspiration for the character Romilly in my novel, I hoped to meet the beckoning fair one, she who was becoming the new inspiration. Once inside, I had to be calm. Convinced her that I didn't care whether she appeared or not. I lit a candle in the bedroom, drew down the blind, took off my coat, and stooped to get my slippers from under the bed. I straightened up. Reflected in the mirror, I saw a gleam of light in the center of the room. It moved up and down through the air. It was the reflection of a candle on my comb. And each of its downward movements was accompanied by a silky, crackling rustle. I went into the living room and returned with the manuscript of the old Romilly. The combing stopped immediately. I was no longer aware of the fair one's presence.
As I thought, she's just jealous. Jealous.
Night after night passed. Still, I did not see her. My life became one passionate and consuming desire to see the new Romilly, the new heroine of my novel, who had fastened herself on my brain in the guise of the beckoning fair one.
Yes, sir? What can I do for you?
I want a bouquet of roses.
Yes, sir. Got some beauties today. Beauties for a beautiful lady, huh? Here's a nice bouquet.
That one will do.
Nothing like roses to win the heart of the fair one, eh?
What'd you say?
I was just making conversation.
You said something about the fair one.
Oh, just a manner of speaking, sir. I didn't mean any offense.
Oh, of course not. I'm sorry. I'll take those flowers now, and I want you to deliver a bouquet of these to my house every morning for the next 2 weeks. I'd made the arrangements with the florist so I wouldn't have to leave the house at all. I hoped the flowers would unbend her coy, stubborn will. They did no good. I lost track of the days. I walked through my rooms with slippered feet now, treading softly, afraid of frightening her away. I kept the windows shut and the crimson blinds down. In this enticing, flower-laden place, I waited for the beckoning fair one. I searched my mind for some reason why she held herself back from me. Suddenly it came to me. The manuscript of the old Romilly, those 15 chapters. I was a fool to think that the new Romilly would show herself to me as long as there existed evidence of my former attachment. I took the manuscript from the window box and was about to throw it into the fire. Who's there?
It's Elsie.
Go away. I can't see you now.
Please let me in, Paul.
No.
Paul, you're in trouble. I know you are.
I'm all right. Go away.
Paul, I only want to help. I promised I'd come if you needed me. Paul. Paul, please answer me. Paul.
I didn't answer. She was a fool. Coming here where she was not wanted. Why didn't she leave me alone? Her voice only irritated me. Soon her calling stopped. I heard her footsteps going down the stairs. Destroyed the manuscript of my old novel, Romilly.
Page by page.
Then I lay down to wait again. How long, how many days? I don't know. I was beyond the world of calendars and clocks. Gradually the strength drained from my body. I gazed vacantly at the star-patterned ceiling. Sometimes I had a fleeting recollection of a novel to be written. It was like something far off. Sometimes I thought about Madeley, the previous tenant who lived here before me, and I wondered whether she had played her coy game with him.
Paul.
Elsie, how did you get in here?
Paul, listen to me. You're not well, darling. Let me take care of you. I said I'd come when you needed me, Paul.
Wait. She called my name. She's here at last.
Paul, what is it? I don't hear anything.
You must hear the old Romilly.
Elsie, get out quickly.
No. No, I won't leave, Paul.
Now, up here on the second floor, you've got four big rooms. Plenty of light and air.
Certainly a quaint-looking place. Say, isn't this the part of the house where that writer lived, the one who's being executed tonight?
Yes, this is it.
What was the name of that girl he murdered?
Elsie Bengo. Of course, it's not a new house, but we'll be glad to do the place over for you. The water tap leaks slightly, but it won't bother you.
And so we have heard how the strange voice of an unseen woman drove Paul Oleron to commit a murder.
Yes, Mr. Barnes, the voice gave him evil advice. But now, listen to a voice that gives helpful advice.
Mole. Mole.
Mole puts face protection first.
Yes, gentlemen, Mole does put face protection first. It guards your face against annoying little nicks and scrapes because it's got a special protective film. A slick, smooth film with plenty of real body and substance. Mole gives your razor something to ride on. Your razor rides along smoothly from the first stroke to the last, and you get a close, clean shave without any pulling or tugging at your whiskers. You'll find that your shaves will get better, better, and better when you use M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the brushless shaving cream that puts face protection first.
This is Jeffrey Barnes again, ladies and gentlemen, inviting you to be with us next week when we will bring you L.A.G. Strong's dramatic story of premeditated murder entitled Breakdown. A man is caught in the complicated web of a love triangle, which he realizes is slowly driving him insane. He attempts to solve his problem with a carefully planned murder, but it comes to a disastrous climax. So, mystery fans, be sure to listen next week to L.A.G. Strong's compelling adventure in crime, Breakdown.
Original music for the Mole Mystery Theater is composed and conducted by Jack Miller. The Beckoning Fair One was written by Oliver Onions and adapted for radio by Eric Arthur. Until next Tuesday, this is Dan Seymour saying good night and good shaving with the brushless shaving cream that puts face protection first. Mole.
Are
more hills mountains to you? Are you too tired, too weary to face daily problems? Then listen. Doctors may find that your fatigue is caused by a borderline anemia. Yes, a borderline anemia resulting from a ferronutritional deficiency of the blood. Decide now to throw off depressing fatigue with the help of ironized yeast tablets. They're formulated to overcome borderline anemia by helping to build up red blood cells. Take IY, ironized yeast tablets, to get more vigor, more drive, more energy.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That was Mole Mystery Theater. Pretty scary tale.
Pretty scary tale, but it does have a lesson to it.
I would have never known.
I just made one up. It's rather convoluted, though. It takes a while.
Okay, Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Apologies to Gar. If a ghost is busy singing to you, then the only thing you can do is hire a piano tuner. With enough practice, it might make it on Ghost Got Talent and leave you alone. There you go. Yeah, I slipped up that one a bit. Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
We might not. There's more piano stuff to drive you crazy. No, we got a lot of radio to go, so we should probably head on over to a Black Mass.
Yeah, Black Mass, just a little bit. I think we've had at least one tale from here before. Horror fantasy radio drama by Eric Bauserfield. He was a leading American dramatist of the post-television era, and series aired on KPFA in Berkeley and KPFK in Los Angeles, because they're not very original. They just had to, you know, A and K. Anyway, from 1963 to 67, it wasn't on any kind of regular schedule at all, airing from, he was director of drama and literature at KPFA from 1966 through 1991. And it just, when he had several of them put together or ready to put together, he'd, I think, just say, hey, you know, let's go with it. And they'd say, okay. I don't have any kind of count as to how many of these shows were actually made, but some of these were original and some of these were different tales from like H. Edgar Allan Poe, Henry James. I think the one tonight is actually from Virginia Woolf.
Who's Afraid? So,
I was of that movie. Jeez, and crackers.
Yeah.
It was.
Yes,
that
it was.
Not one of. It was not a nice movie, and
no.
Probably my least favorite of all Elizabeth Taylor films. Even though Richard Burton was in there, it was just okay.
Yeah,
it was bad. I just didn't care for it at all. But that's okay.
The devil.
I don't
the
have
devil.
To.
That's right. The devil, you say. All right. Hey, let's get moving then so we can have time for CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Again, it's going to be a nice wrap-up. You guys are going to love it. But first,
yep,
a story called Suspiciously Haunted House from the Black Mass. And
yep, and there's no actual air date on this that anybody ever recorded in the history of all time in radio.
Would you give it a guess? Or, I mean, is there a year at least that we can reference that got anything to go on?
Sure.
I think you said the 60s.
1963 to 67. How's that?
There you go.
Give me a four-year window. A four
somewhere
year window.
In there. That's right. Regardless, you'll like it. Here it is, The Black Mass. Just a one-part show, and we'll be back.
And now, our second story about a house is about a haunted house, written by Virginia Woolf.
Whatever hour you woke, there was a door shutting. From room to room they went, hand in hand, lifting here, opening there, making sure. A ghostly couple. Page or two. Yeah. Now they've found it. One would be certain, stopping the pencil on the margin. And then, tired of reading, one might rise and see for oneself. Bubbling with content, and the hum of the threshing machine sounding from the farm. What did I come in here for? What did I want to find? My hands were empty. Perhaps it's upstairs then. The apples were in the loft. And so down again, the garden still as ever. Only the book had slipped into the grass.
Here we left it.
And here, here. But they had found it in the drawing room. Not that one could ever see them. The window panes reflected apples, reflected roses. All the leaves were green in the glass. If they moved in the drawing room, the apple only turned its yellow side. Yet, the moment after, if the door was opened, spread upon the floor, hung upon the walls, pendant from the ceiling, what? My hands were empty. The shadow of a thrush crossed the carpet. From the deepest wells of silence, the wood pigeon drew its bubble of sound.
Save. Save. Save.
The pulse of the house beat softly.
The buried treasure. The room.
The pulse stopped short. Oh, was that the buried treasure? The light had faded. Out in the garden, then, the trees spun darkness for a wandering beam of sun. So fine, so rare, coolly sunk beneath the surface, the beam I sought, always burnt behind the glass. Death was the glass. Death was between us. Coming to the woman first, hundreds of years ago, leaving the house, sealing all the windows. The rooms were darkened. He left it, left her, went north, went east, saw the stars turned in the southern sky, sought the house again, found it dropped beneath the downs.
Say, say, say.
The pulse of the house beat gladly.
The treasure yours.
The wind roars up the avenue. Trees stoop and bend this way and that. Moonbeams splash and spill wildly in the rain. But the beam of the lamp falls straight from the window. The candle burns stiff and still. Wandering through the house, opening the windows, whispering not to wake us, the ghostly couple seek their joy.
Here we slept.
Kisses without number.
Waking in the morning.
Silver between the trees.
Upstairs.
In the garden.
When summer came.
In winter snow time.
The doors go shutting far in the distance, gently knocking like the pulse of a heart. Nearer they come. Cease at the doorway. The wind falls. The rain slides silver down the glass. Our eyes darken. We hear no steps beside us. We see no lady spread her ghostly cloak. His hands shield the lantern.
Look, sound asleep, love upon their lips.
Stooping, holding their silver lamp above us. Long they look, and deeply, long they pause. The wind drives straightly, The flare stoops slightly. Wild beams of moonlight cross both floor and wall. And meeting, stain the faces bent. The faces pondering. The faces that search the sleepers and seek their hidden joy.
Save. Save. Save.
The heart of the house beats proudly.
Ah, years. Then again you found me.
Here.
In the garden waiting.
Laughing, rolling apples in the loft.
Here we left our treasure.
Here we left it. Here we left it.
Stooping, their light lifts their lids upon my eyes.
Save. Save. Save.
The pulse of the house beat wildly. Waking, I cry, oh, is this your buried treasure? The light in the heart?
Here we left it.
Here we left it.
Say. Say. Say.
House by Virginia Woolf. The story was performed by Pat Franklin, with music specially composed by Peter Winkler, and technical production by John Whiting. In The Boarded Window, the first story you heard this evening by Ambrose Bierce, you heard Ben Jacopetti as the narrator, Amanda Folger as Janice, Eric Bauersfeld played Murlock. The music was performed by Carl Schrager, and the technical production was by John Whiting. And now, good night.
The goal here was to get progressively creepier. I think we're reaching that goal.
Yep. And the creepiest is yet to come.
Yes, indeed.
That's right. That's right, because I have another moral.
Oh, you would. Expect a guy to be ready all the damn time. Beery House Radio proudly presents a garland.
I can wait.
Moral of the story.
I can wait. Apologies to Gar. If you want to hear a good ghost story, you should get a ghost to tell it. There you go. That would make a good story.
There you go. Stunning.
Yep.
That would truly be a ghost story, then.
It would be a ghost story.
If your ghost it doesn't even have to be scary. If a ghost is telling it, it is a ghost story, by definition. Yes.
Yep, absolutely. We've got so many good stories coming at you in the future with Eerie House Radio. Not just for Mystery Theater, but so many. So many great, great series that we have planned for you.
Yes, not just for the rest of Halloween, but Dave's talking about in the shows coming up. We're already schemed up through through almost the end of November, just before Thanksgiving.
We got tons and tons of themed shows just awaiting a time slot too.
Yes, and speaking of time, after Halloween weekend, the first weekend in November is the time change, so we'll be doing a little time travel sci-fi kind of stuff. And
we'll be doing some
special guests
some special telephone time travel. How do you like that? Them apples.
That sounds pretty good. Get into a booth, the phone booth, and and away you go, just like Bill and Ted. We're going to be typing. We've got body snatching. We've got all kinds of fun stuff.
And special guest. I'm sorry, go ahead. You were about to mention who's going to be here on the 4th.
That's okay. Saturday the 6th, it's Lord Bloodraw. That's right, lords and ladies. The man himself, much like Dave, he does a little bit of everything, hosts movies, does radio, does live shows, and he's going to join us for an episode of Eerie House Radio.
Looking forward to that.
Yep, I've never worked with him before. I've worked in conjunction with him. He used to send shows when we were doing Eerie House Television. And I always just loved it because his shows were formatted good, never had to worry about content, you know, adult stuff, and just a very good host. Like you, Dave, I don't have to worry about anything that you do, you know, as far as content being more adult than I'd prefer to have.
Until I have a couple of beers before broadcast time,
Well, that's going to happen. We've all got...
Oh, yes. So much fun.
Gee, I could never picture myself getting, in a happy way with alcohol and then being vulgar on a microphone. Never happened. Never,
ever happened. Not even when you were disc jockeying.
I made a living doing that, actually. Kind of what I was getting at there. But fortunately, we've got old-time radio here for you. And as Dave promised, the best for last from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. An interesting title.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, a very interesting title, The House at Chimney Pot Lane.
Yeah, and I was going to explain that we both thought Gar was going to be with us tonight, which he was not able to make it. And so I cut out all the commercials because we had three shows and said, okay, the only way I can do this is to cut down the commercials and we'll do what we can to make sure I got enough time to get this in the two-hour block. We got plenty of time now. So
we might just play some commercials to make up for it. How about that? We've got plenty of material loaded up just for you.
We do.
And for us to hide behind when we run out of...
We got it all.
We do. Good stuff to hide behind when we got nothing to say. No.
Even when we have something to say, usually it's nothing to say. Yes.
Agreed. I agree, as the man says.
And it's all about dreaming.
I hope you're feeling better, Gar. Get over that, get past that situation you're in, and we're hoping you're feeling better soon.
Yep, maybe we'll see you back tomorrow, we hope.
Especially by Saturday, you got to do your horrible horror, you know.
That's right.
There you go, So let's get on with this terrifying, interesting story from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, originally broadcast on
episode number 824 from January, March, April 28th, 1970 and 8.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Happy to have you with me. It gets lonely in here sometimes when it's dark and quiet, and there's no one for company except the strange and brooding spirits. But we're not staying here for long. We're on our way to Connecticut to visit a little house on an out-of-the-way dirt road called Chimney Pot Lane. If you're interested in country property, you might be interested in it. But then again, you may not. You see, the house is vacant. Not because nobody wants to buy it. The owner is afraid to sell it.
There isn't a real estate agent in the county who touched that house, including me.
But it's so perfect for us.
No, Mrs. Sage, the house on Chimney Pot Lane can never be lived in again.
Now you're going to say it's haunted.
That would be nothing, Mr. Sage, compared to whatever evil is in that house.
Our mystery drama, The House on Chimney Pot Lane, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Bob Juren and stars Marion Seldes. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One. I'd like you to meet two friends of mine, Jim and Marion Sage. They're a playwriting team who have just had a hit play open on Broadway. They've been writing for years, living frugally in a small apartment in Greenwich Village, and at last they've hit the big time, as the saying goes. Their new financial security is making a dream come true, the dream of a house of their own in the country, where they could enjoy life while they continue to write their plays. And that's what led them to Connecticut and the house on Chimney Pot Lane.
I'm Mrs. Green. Can I help you?
Yes. You seem to be the only real estate agent in town, and we're interested in knowing something about a house.
Sit down, please.
Thank you. I'm Jim Sage, my wife Marion.
How do you do?
Hello.
We are the only realtors in this village, and we do have a lot of beautiful listings.
We're interested in one particular house. We passed it this afternoon, Pete, in the windows. It seemed to be empty, and we wondered if it's for sale and if you might have a key.
We usually have our sign out in front of the houses for sale. Did you see it?
Oh, no, there was no sign.
Do you remember where it was?
Oh, yes. It was the end of a narrow road called Chimney Pot Lane.
Chimney Pot Lane? That house?
Yes. We fell in love with it, and we were hoping...
That house definitely isn't for sale.
Oh, dear. Why is it vacant, then?
The owner closed it up and moved to Florida.
Well, I thought houses were at a premium around here.
The house on Chimney Pot Lane can never be lived in again.
Now you're going to say that it's haunted.
We're not generally given to superstition here, Mr. Sage, but things happened in that house that no one can turn their back on.
Like what?
We don't talk about it anymore, but...
Please.
Well, there was nothing wrong until 5 years ago when a group of cultists moved into the house. No one knows what kind of things they were up to, but they left, and then things started.
What kind of things?
Well, the next family that owned it disappeared entirely. Just like that. I mean, water still in the tub, breakfast things on the table. Never heard from again.
And, there was more?
The next owner just abandoned it. Wouldn't tell anybody what happened. And finally, Ed Hagen, who owns it now, tried to burn it down, and, well, that was the capper.
Capper?
Now, the place wouldn't burn. Fire started in the kitchen. Burned for almost an hour before the fire department was notified. And no more damage than one kitchen wall. That house is bewitched.
Can you give us the address of this Mr. Hagen?
He won't sell.
Well, we'd at least like to ask.
Very well. But you're wasting your time.
Believe what she said?
Well, what happened may be true, but I don't think it's evil spirits. It's just some explanation that no one wanted to look for.
Want to swing by and take another look?
Oh, I'd love to.
Hey, Marion. Hey, come around here.
What is it?
Look, the boards are loose on this window. I didn't notice it before.
Hey, you want to go in?
You think we should?
Well, Mr. Hagen's in Florida. We got to see the inside if we're serious about buying.
Let's go.
Good. And I just ought to come off easy. There you go. And I give you a hand up.
Not high. There. That's easy.
Well, here I come.
We're in a pantry.
Yeah, light's kind of dim. Come on. Hey, here's the kitchen. Ah, that's where the fire was, huh?
It was strange, wasn't it? I mean, that the whole house didn't burn.
Well, I still don't think black magic had anything to do with it.
Look how charming. A sunken living room.
Hey, with a fireplace. Paneling's in good condition, too.
And a den, Jim. Look over here.
Hey, yeah. Might make a good workroom for us.
Oh, isn't it perfect? And a fireplace in here, too? Oh, I'm falling more in love with it every minute.
Hey, check that circular staircase, huh?
I can't imagine a better place for us, Jim. Oh, let's see if we can get in touch with Mr. Hagen.
I'm with you. I'm ready to take it, evil spirits and all.
And maybe we'll even write a play about it.
Look, let's get back to the city. I'll try to call Mr. Hagen tonight. Okay. Yeah, thanks very much, Mr. Hagen. We'll have our attorney handle things. Thanks. Goodbye.
It's ours?
Well, that was Hagen's son. Old Mr. Hagen died last year. His son's only too glad to get rid of the house.
How long will it take?
A couple of weeks, maybe. I'll get Fred to handle the details.
Oh, I hope we're in by Christmas. I'm going to ask Georgia to give us some advice on the decorating. Broadway's number one set designer ought to have some good ideas for a country house with a resident evil spirit. Beautiful, Georgia? Oh, it is. I've got a dozen ideas already. I would suggest cutting through the pantry and combining it with the kitchen.
Take a look at the den, Georgia. Now, we want something dramatic in there.
Okay. Oh, isn't this cozy fireplace bay window? Well, we're thinking of some sort of bold wallpaper. You see, that one wall is so... unbroken, mm-hmm. Yeah. Something dramatic. Hey!
Hmm?
I got it. How about a photo mural?
Not a bad idea. Got something in mind?
I do. You want a little flair. I think I've got just the thing.
What?
A jungle scene complete with lion, birds, ferns, vines.
That sounds exciting.
Do you know the photographer Elliot Mann?
No.
Well, he's an old friend from college. He's been in Africa and took some incredible shots. One would make a terrific mural for that wall.
Well, let's take a look.
I'll borrow some slides from Elliot. I think it might be perfect. It would certainly be unique. It's really sensational, George.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. I was having some doubts that it might be too overpowering.
Oh, no, I love it. It makes the whole room seem larger.
Yeah, it's like having an indoor garden, you know, with all those vines and ferns.
That lion on the rock. And the tropical bird, though, it's so dramatic. I can't wait for the housewarming to see people's reaction.
Oh, by the way, I'm bringing Elliot to the party. He's anxious to know how the mural turned out.
Great, it'll be nice to meet him. It's a week from Saturday, you know.
You two have certainly done wonders in the month and a half you've been in here.
With your help.
Well, the place was in pretty good shape.
You haven't met up with any of those celebrated evil spirits, have you?
No, not a one. The house is as normal as we are.
You know, where there is something evil or psychic or whatever, you can usually sense it.
We haven't felt anything but happiness in all the weeks we've been living here. I'll get it.
Georgia, come in.
Oh, it's starting to snow.
The forecast said snow and freezing rain.
Marion, this is Elliot Mann.
Hi. Nice to be here.
I'm delighted you could come. And we love your photograph.
Oh.
I guess you know that.
Well, I'm happy it worked out so well.
Come on in. Meet everybody. And we'll show you how the wall looks.
That is impressive. The details held up beautifully in the blow-up.
Yeah, the feeling of realism is incredible. Everybody's talking about it.
Well, I'll never forget shooting that photo. The stupid lion attacked us a second after I snapped. Chased our car for almost a mile before he gave up.
Well, you have to expect those things when you gallop around Africa.
Well, the animals weren't as dangerous as the natives. They were a wicked bunch in that part of the bush. They're headhunters, primitive, superstitious, and utterly ruthless.
I'll stay in the good old USA, thanks.
They refuse to be photographed, if anyone's foolish enough to get close enough to try.
Why?
Well, it's a common belief among many primitive people that the camera captures their soul. They're deadly afraid of cameras.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Needless to say, you didn't get any shots.
Oh, not of the headhunters. It wasn't worth the risk.
Hold on a minute. I think you might be mistaken, Elliot.
What do you mean?
I've never noticed it before. We've had the mural up for 2 weeks, but I just didn't see it till now. Look, through the leaves down in this corner. It's the face of a man.
Let me see that.
Oh, it's a face, all right. You probably didn't know he was there when you took the picture.
Well, he couldn't have been. There wasn't a native for 10 miles around.
Anyway, I would have seen it on the slide.
Well, maybe the blow-up brought it out.
It's just a trick of the lighting. You're right, Marion. It does resemble one of the Bushmen. When you stand back, it looks like a face. It's just the pattern of the leaves and ferns. There's no real face there.
Oh, yes, I see it now. It looks like the real thing to me.
Well, you probably can find lots of images in those leaves. The dappled sunlight does it.
Looking for things in the mural will give Jim and me something to do when we hit those writing blocks.
Marion, some of the gang's starting to leave, and they're worried about getting back to the city in the storm. It's turning to sleet.
Look at it out there. Yes, I'm glad you invited me to stay the night.
Well, I'd better start back, too. I'm leaving for Wyoming in the morning.
Oh, it's a shame to wind things up so soon. I wish we could put everybody up. You better not wait any longer, Elliot. It turned to sleet, all right. It's a fairyland. Everything is ice. The sun on those trees. It's fantastic.
And we're without a phone. The branches are down all over the place. I'm going into town.
Oh, the joys of winter in suburbia. I hope the crowd made it back safe last night.
Well, I'm sure they did. I'll be back as soon as I can. I've got to get phone company out here, and then I'm going to get a haircut. I'll see you later.
Drive carefully, dear. Let's take our coffee into the den, Georgia.
Okay.
I'll start the fire. There's some embers left from last night.
Oh, it really is beautiful out there. The scene through the bay window almost looks like a painting itself.
Georgia.
What?
Look over here. The face I saw in the leaves last night.
Hey. Where is it?
But that's what I mean. It's gone.
Morning, ma'am. Your phone company.
Yes, come in. I saw you working on the wires. That was fast.
Well, I was in the area when I got the call. Weather like this keeps us busy.
Oh, I can imagine.
Well, I've got to check the instrument now.
Of course, this way. Phone's in the den. Would you like some coffee?
No. Thanks very much. I got to get going when I check you out.
Okay. The phone's right in there.
Thank you.
And if you change your mind about the coffee, just say so. It's already made.
All right, thank you. Let's see here. Operator, this is Maxwell checking, 0419. Right, okay. Let me get that down. 41 Chestnut Court. Okay, I'll head there next. Right. What is this? No! Get back! No!
What I think I heard in Jim and Marion's den? Perhaps we were mistaken. What really happened, of course, was that the phone man turned around and saw... Well, come to think of it, what did he see? Perhaps we'll find out about that and more about this house on Chimney Pot Lane when I return shortly with Act Two.
And we will return with Act Two as well.
You know, I got to thinking, Dale, all these mystery theaters we've been sharing, and Marion Seldes' name comes up a lot. I didn't really know anything about her. So before I reveal how many episodes she's been on, just a little bit about Marion Seldes, who was born August 23rd, 1928, died October 6th, 2014. She was age 86 at the time. She was a five-time Tony Award nominee. She won the Tony for the best featured actress in a play for A Delicate Balance in 1967, received subsequent nominations for Father's Day 1971, Death Trap 1978-82, Ring Around the Moon 1999, Dinner at Eight 2002, and she also won the Drama Desk Award for Father's Day. Her Broadway credits include Equitus 74-77, Ivanov 1997, The Deuce 2007, and was inducted into the Theater Hall of Fame in 1995 and received a special Tony Award for Lifetime Achievement in 2010. And just something really interesting in there is she appeared in every one of the 1,809 Broadway performances of Ira Levin's play Death Trap, a feat that earned her mention in the Guinness Book of World Records as most durable actress. Seldes was also known for her readings of short stories in selected shorts series hosted by Isaiah Scheffler in New York City's Symphony Space. She also recorded some dramatic reading albums as well. And just to kind of wrap up for this visit with Marion Seldes anyway, she appeared in a total of 206 episodes of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Wow, that is quite a few.
And as you heard from many of her Broadway feats, she was appearing in Broadway at the same time. This was recorded in the late morning, early afternoon, and of course, Broadway goes on at night. So, you know, it just was something she obviously truly enjoyed doing, working with Hyman Brown and the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Amazing numbers of.
Now, is Death Trap the one that was made into a film with Christopher Reeves and I think Michael Caine? I'm almost positive of it. And we lost Dave. So anyway, as I was reminiscing, the musical Death Trap had Michael Caine and Christopher Reeve. I went to see the film. It's a funny story. And there's a scene in there where, you know, there's a lot of subterfuge, a lot of mystery going back and forth. And there's this scene where Michael Caine kisses Christopher Reeves full on the lips. And I hear this voice coming from behind me about two or three rows back. Oh, no, Superman, no. yes, a funny memory of seeing Death Trap in the theaters. Did you hear any of that, Dave, while you were trying to get hooked back
in? I just caught the end of it. I caught the punchline.
Yeah, it was funny. I just remember this guy, he was ruined that Superman kissed the man on the lips.
Doesn't do me anything either, but okay. Does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Does nothing for me.
No. And that's fine. And that's fine. Whatever makes your socks roll up and down, that's how we feel, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
As long as you don't make us change your socks.
Yes. We're not touching. Yes. No laundry here. No ticky, no laundry, no nothing. All you get is great, great radio, and we got some. You know what gave this story credibility, and let me get lost in the story and just accept it? The realism. Because if a realtor says, I don't want to make no money off of this transaction, you know they're scared of something.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
If the realtor's not like, oh, yeah.
Yep, I can't sell to you. And I wouldn't sell to you if I could.
Then you want to give your ears a good sharp listen because they're trying to tell you something.
Yep.
Oh, heavens.
Absolutely.
We might as well get into the middle of the story, part two of three, House on Chimney Pot Lane.
I'm happy you've returned. You see, as your host, I have to be here. And after what I heard a few moments ago, I'd just as soon not be here alone. Thanks for your company. I suppose you heard it too, that ominous growl right in the middle of a pleasant Connecticut home. And it certainly gave our telephone repairman a turn. He couldn't believe his ears or his eyes. But then, here on Mystery Theater, lots of things happen that are hard to believe. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Hello? Yes? Oh, yes, he was here. Just a minute. Yes, his truck's still in the driveway. So he must have gone outside again. All right, I'll have him call right in.
What's that all about?
Phone company. They want to talk to the repairman. Did you see him go out?
No.
I left him in here checking the phone. That was at least half an hour ago.
That's right. We've been talking in the kitchen. Jim came home. We wouldn't leave without his truck.
Wouldn't think so. He must be outside. I'll look.
I'll come with you. Jim, did you see anything of the repairman when you came in?
No. No, his truck's out there. I don't know where he is.
Well, come on. We'll have a look. Telephone? Phone man? Are you out there? Hello? He would have answered. I just don't know where he went. I'll call him back and tell him.
I thought he might be in the basement, but he isn't.
That's strange. He's not here, but where would he go without his truck? It's been 2 hours, and the truck's still there.
Oh, there's a car pulling in the driveway.
It's a police car. What in the world?
It must have something to do with the repairman.
Jim, the police are here.
Yeah, I see.
There's someone with them. You better go out, Jim. They're looking at the truck. Well, that other man must be from the phone company.
Hello, officer.
Mr. Sage?
Yes?
I'd like to talk with you for a minute.
Well, of course. Come on in. This way, officer. This is my wife, Mrs. Sage, and a friend, Miss Kane.
Well, how do you do? I'm Officer Rich.
Is the repairman still missing?
That's right, Mrs. Sage. I'm sorry to have to bother you like this, but I have to ask some questions.
I really don't know what to tell you.
When was the last time you saw Bob Maxwell?
When I showed him into the den. Hmm. He'd been outside, and he came in to check the phone, and I left him alone. And then Miss Kane and I had our coffee in the kitchen.
That's right.
And you were here, Mr. Sage?
No, I was in town getting a haircut.
Uh-huh. So the last person to see Maxwell was you, Mrs. Sage, hmm?
Yes.
May I see the den, please?
Sure, right this way. It's right off the living room.
Thank you. The operator says Maxwell checked in with her at 9:42. She gave him instructions for his next stop. And that's the last anyone heard from him. Or I take it saw him.
But I left him right here.
Wow. That's some wall.
Yeah, a friend of Miss Kane's took that photograph, and we had it specially made to fit the wall.
And neither of you heard or saw Maxwell go out?
No, but we were in the kitchen. I mean, he could have left without us knowing it.
Well, I don't know what else to ask. We don't suspect foul play, obviously, Mr. Sage. But this house, well, it has had a reputation.
Oh, we've been here 2 months and haven't had one single strange thing happen.
Until now.
Oh, now, look. Don't tell me you think that anything...
Well, I don't know what to think, Mr. Sage. It wouldn't be the first time someone disappeared from this house without a trace.
Yeah, so they say.
I have to admit superstition has no place in a police investigation, except that this man isn't around, and his truck is.
And my wife was the last to see him.
Exactly.
Well, we're as baffled as you are, officer.
Well, I'll make my report, and we'll see where we go from there. The phone company's taking the truck back. Oh, and Mr. Sage, if anything out of the ordinary should happen, something that would give us any kind of clue, you'll let us know immediately, hmm?
Of course.
Put another log on the fire while you're up, Jim, will you?
Right, and I'll freshen the drinks.
Oh, this is so warm and cozy. I wish I didn't have to go back to the city tomorrow.
You're welcome to stay as long as you want. You know that, Georgia.
Oh, I know, and I appreciate it, Marion.
Well, here you go, Marion. Georgia.
Thank you.
Well, it's been quite a weekend between last night's party and today's little episode.
So curious about that man from the phone company to disappear like that.
Well, he certainly didn't meet with any foul play here.
Marion...
What?
Marion, I've been looking at the mural. It seemed to me the lion had his mouth open, like he was snarling.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, well, look at it now.
Well, the mouth's closed.
And his head is raised, as though he were sniffing the air.
Yeah, I could swear the lion looks different now than he did when the picture went up.
Well, maybe it looks different. We don't remember. But it can't be different.
Listen, when I get back to the city tomorrow, I'll look at Elliot's original slide.
Yeah, that's an idea. Well, that ought to settle it.
Fascinating the way the firelight makes the foliage seem almost to sway.
Hypnotizing.
Yeah, that's probably why we think we see things that aren't there.
Like the man's face I saw last night. It was gone this morning in the daylight.
Well, you know, there's more in that picture than meets the eye. Looks like we'll have no end of fun with it.
Thank you.
George's train come in on time?
On the nose.
And while I'm making coffee. Let's get started on that fourth scene today.
Oh, I was hoping to. I'll be in the den and bring in some donuts. They're in the bread box. What in the world was he doing over there in his bare feet? Oh, well. Place needs a good going over after that party. I'll clean up tomorrow.
Yeah, I was thinking we ought to open scene four in the hospital waiting room rather than Millie's apartment.
Jim, you shouldn't walk around these cold floors in your bare feet.
What are you talking about?
Your footprints on the floor over by the wall.
I wasn't in here in bare feet.
Those are wet footprints, aren't they?
Where? I don't see them.
They were right there a second ago. Damp footprints across the rug. A man's bare foot.
Well, it couldn't have been. I haven't been in here at all since you drove Georgia down the station. Much the less in my bare feet.
It wasn't my imagination.
Well, I didn't say it was. But the prints weren't mine. But I think maybe we've let the tales about this house get the best of us. You know, last night, I thought I was seeing things with the lion. You thought you saw a man's face, and now you think you saw wet footprints. Now, the lion couldn't change, huh? We're just reading things into it. Come on, let's get to work.
Hello?
Marion, it's Georgia.
Hi, Georgia.
Listen, I've meant to call you for days, but I've been up to my ears in work. I went over to Elliot's and looked at the slide.
Oh, yes, we were wondering about that.
Must have been the firelight. The slide's the same as the wall. The lion has his head in the air and his mouth is closed.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It hasn't changed. Isn't that funny? We should have thought that it was different.
How are things with the house? Did that telephone man ever turn up?
No, not that we know of. We haven't heard. By the way, Georgia, could you come up this weekend? Jim's going to Philadelphia to doctor a new tryout. I'd love the company.
Sure, I'd love it. I need a break.
Georgia, hold on a minute, will you?
Sure.
Yes, it is. Georgia.
Yeah, what's up?
The face is back in the mural.
What?
I've been staring at the wall while we've been talking. It's there. The whole outline of a bushy head and face through the ferns, like the one I saw at the party.
Elliot said that was a trick of the lighting.
But remember the day after the party, it was gone.
You didn't see it again, you mean?
Yes, that's what I mean. See you Friday.
I'll be up in the afternoon.
Who's on the phone?
It's Georgia.
I'll call and let you know the train.
Good, I'll meet you.
And Marion, relax.
I will. Bye, Georgia.
Good idea to have her up here for the weekend. I'll be back late Sunday afternoon. I hope.
Georgia says that the lion in the photo slide is the same as the wall. There's no difference.
Well, I was expecting that. Yeah, we're letting our imaginations run away with us.
Leave the dishes, Georgia. Let's have some brandy by the fire.
Oh, you don't have to twist my arm for that.
Probably Jim. He said he'd call when he got to Philadelphia.
Oh, he made good time. Oh, bring the coffee into the den. The brandy's in the liquor cabinet. I'll be right in. Say hi to Jim for me. Hello?
Hi, honey.
I thought it would be you.
How are things with you?
Just finished dinner.
Everything is all right, isn't it?
Of course.
Well, I'm glad George is there. See you Sunday.
We'll be here. Bye, darling. I put on a fresh pot of coffee. It'll be ready in a while. Now, how about that brandy, Oh, yes. It's in the lower cabinet, and the glasses are there, too.
Oh, well, let me get them. Nothing like a swirl of bread.
Well, now, where in the world did this come from?
What is it?
It's a feather. A blue feather. I don't have anything with feathers.
Where was it?
On the floor. I picked it up right here.
Exactly under that bird in the mural.
What do you mean?
There has never been a feather in this house. I can't stand them.
You think that... Oh, Marianne, it can't be.
Look at the bird. Look. That feather is from that bird in the picture.
Oh, now, Marianne, come on. You've got me doing it. I could swear I saw those ferns move.
Where?
Over there in the right-hand corner. What is happening?
I'm going crazy. You do. Here, drop.
Yes.
We've got to get out of this house. I don't know what it is, but we've got to get out.
Oh, I knew there was something about that picture. Come on, Georgia. Hurry. Marion. Marion, look. It's moving. Oh, the lion is coming into this house.
Georgia! Run!
Well, the big cat is out of the bag. Now we know that all those things Marion was seeing, the face of the man, the different face on the lion, and most recently the feather, weren't figments of hers or anyone's imagination. Something strange is happening in this house on Chimney Pot Lane, and I'll join you there shortly in Act Three.
This is WBBM Chicago.
Yeah, it's not really Chicago. You'd hear gunshots in the background. But we're somewhere in Northeast Ohio, sometimes parts of Florida, sometimes other parts unknown. And welcome good old Bob and Fogsbane for joining us in the chat as we celebrate Halloween week with some great radio.
I tell you what, did I tell you this was a good story?
You did, and you were right on.
You know, when you don't sleep well, it's so nice to have all these great radio programs to keep you company at nights, you know?
Yep. Very cheerful.
Now, you know what's funny is if a story's not very good, I stay awake. But if it's a really good story and I want to hear it, I fall asleep because I need these stories because my mind just wanders all over the place all the time, as you darn well know. But
yes,
when I try to sleep, I focus on a really good story and I'm out. And sometimes it takes me, you know, because if I wake up, then I put it back on to hear the part. But again, it puts me back out again. So sometimes it takes me, you know, 3 or 4 tries to hear a really good story.
I know what you mean. I used to be that way reading for me. Oh, how I love to read myself to sleep because I could focus on something and, you know, the chill factor would hit. I would chill out and then be able to sleep. Now it's more television. I find myself falling asleep in front of the TV quite a bit. But, I kind of know what you mean.
You kind of hear the experts, they say that reading a book is not really the best thing if you're trying to go to sleep because, you know, you're concentrating so much. But, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's different. We react differently to all kinds of stimulus or stimuli and or lack of. Yeah.
Watch where you sit, buddy. Yes.
Watch where you sit. But
indeed, I'll be high stepping it.
But excellent. Oh, just an amazing story we have coming up here, and it's hard to believe you're going to wrap this up in one more part, but we are going to wrap this up in one more part.
Yeah, with a CBS Radio Mystery Theater on top of it to boot, which is usually a lengthy show, but that's okay. We'll have bonus material for you if time permits, and I think it will.
I think so.
I think so. Let's go ahead.
I think so.
Let's go ahead and wrap up House at Chimney Pot.
I told you I'd meet you back at the house on Chimney Pot Lane, but I'm afraid that's not where we're going now as we begin Act Three. Did I say a moment ago that something strange was happening in Marion Sage's den? Strange? Downright terrifying.
Run, Georgia! Run! It's attacking! This way, run! It's going to kill us! What is happening, Marion? What is it?
I don't know. We're surrounded by the jungle.
Oh, keep going. Oh, dear heaven, what's happening to us? Slippery,
Georgia!
I tripped on that vine.
Let me help you.
Oh, it's all right. He's turned back. He's not following us anymore.
Where are we? Where's your house?
I don't know any more than you know, George.
We're in the jungle.
But how? Or why?
1 minute we were looking at the wall, and then here we are.
This has got to be some kind of hallucination. This is not happening to us.
The line you tripped over is real enough. Your ankle is bleeding.
I hadn't even noticed.
But you're right about moving. But it's so dense. Which way do we go? And where?
can't move another step. I'm scared to death.
I want to lie down and go to sleep and wake up from this nightmare.
There seems to be a path leading off that way. We have got to keep moving, Marion. Come on.
George, is that smoke?
Yes, it is. Up ahead.
The path we're on, I never thought about it.
What?
This path has to be made by someone or something coming and going.
I see what you mean. Try not to make a sound. He's coming to the top of a hill.
Shh. Stay back up there.
Watch out. Look, down there.
It's a village. We're on the road into town.
Look at those people. Just like the man I saw in the picture.
Look at the top of those poles.
Are they...
skulls. Come on, back down the path before they see us.
How far do you think we've come from the village?
I haven't the slightest idea.
So hot. Humid. I can hardly breathe.
We're going to have to find some kind of shelter.
It's starting to get so dark.
Yes, and there's no telling what comes out at night in this place.
Georgia?
Huh?
Listen. Sounds like water.
It is. Up ahead, a waterfall.
Well, at least maybe we could get cooled off.
Oh, it should be fresh for drinking. Oh, beautiful. Don't get too close. Those rapids are full of rocks.
So cool.
Marion? Look over there. On the other side.
What do you see?
It looks like a cave just under the bank.
Yes, I see it.
It might be a safe place for the night. Here we are, down on the rock.
Yeah, I'm okay.
It seems to be a good-sized opening.
It's so dark in there. Maybe there's something in there.
Oh, wait, my cigarette lighter in the pocket of my slacks. At least we'll know what we're getting into.
Not bad at all. Like a large room.
Someone's had a fire in here, too. We're not the first tenant,
George. There's some kind of animal lying over there in that corner.
What?
We better get out of here fast.
It's not moving.
George, don't go any closer. What's the matter with you?
Marion, look. The telephone repairman.
What? Get back. Get back. I got a stick.
You? Here.
Women. Two women.
You're the phone man, Mr. Maxwell.
Holy. This gets worse all the time. You're the lady with the crazy wall.
Yes, the same thing happened to you.
What happened to me? I was fixing the phone, and all of a sudden a lion leaped out at me, and I've been roaming around in the jungle. I just don't know how many days.
That's what happened to us. You've been here a whole week.
Is that how long? I've been hiding from animals and headhunters and eating berries.
There's no telling how long we'll all be here.
Is there any way back?
We hope so. But we just don't know where to look. Every part of the jungle looks like every other part.
Not so. I've been here longer than you. Now, there are certain spots that are really different.
In what way?
Well, I've come on places where the foliage looks almost fake. Now, there's one spot where there are more birds. Now, they all seem to gather together. I saw this bird sitting up in a tree, and all of a sudden it flicks its tail, you know, and a big feather flies out, and right before my eyes... It disappeared. It just disappeared into thin air.
The feather. Was it blue?
It could have been. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it was.
And I know where it landed. Can you find this place where the birds gather? That may be our way back.
I think so. It's downstream a ways.
What do you mean, Georgia?
The blue feather we found on the floor of the den. It must have come from that bird. We were standing inches away from you, Mr. Maxwell. Neither of us knew it.
I don't know what you're talking about, ma'am.
No, you couldn't. But if we can find those birds, we might be close to getting out of this whatever it is.
Well, it's too dark to try now. But we could in the morning.
We must in the morning.
Is it much further to where the birds are?
See that clump of tall trees in the distance? Well, it was just to the right of them that I saw the birds, and down below was where the ferns and things looked different.
But do we have to go that far? I'm exhausted.
What's that large dark area up ahead?
That beats me. Must be a bog or something.
You know, it looks to me as though it's moving.
It does. Sort of rippling.
It might be quicksand. I don't remember seeing it before.
It must stretch for miles. Can we get across it?
Depends on what it is.
I think it's moving toward us. Look.
It's spreading like a big oil slick.
It's moving, and it is headed toward us.
Darn if I can tell what it is.
We better turn back.
We're too late.
Oh, good Lord. They're ants. Millions of ants.
Run. Run this way.
They're all around us. Anchors and ants.
Just drove up. Georgia told me she was spending the weekend. I wanted another look at that mural. No one answers. I guess the girls are out.
Probably antique hunting. They said they were doing that today. Come on in.
Door's open. I'd like Marion to leave without locking the front door. Well, I got back a day early. Say, it's strange. All the lights are on. It's only 1 o'clock.
Yeah, it looks like they were having a party. Coffee and brandy.
Elliot, something's wrong. Marion would never leave the den like this.
Hey, that's curious. A blue feather.
Where did that come from?
It was on the floor here.
Marion doesn't have any feathers.
This is from a tropical bird.
I want to know where Marion and Georgia are.
Almost to the river.
I don't think I can go another step.
No, you can.
Help.
Come on. We're ahead of the devils. It's just a few more yards. That's it. Into the water.
Oh, thank heaven.
We're safe from them now. It's not far to the other side. Follow me. Here, I'll help you.
I'm out. Thanks. Any idea where we are?
Oh, not anymore. I'm going to take a look over the top of the bank.
I'm so tired, Georgia. I think I'm going to die. No, you're not. We're going to get out of this.
We don't know where to go. Tell me what to do.
All this wandering around and being chased for nothing. Marion! Look. Through the ferns. Is that a man? Crouching? One of the headhunters.
Well, there's nothing familiar on top of...
Shh. Look over there. There's a headhunter looking at us through the fence.
Oh.
What do we do?
Stay still. He's alone.
There he goes. He's running away.
Yes, he's probably gone for help. We'd better get out of here before they get back.
They know this place better than we do. We'll never escape them.
Look, I don't want to end up on one of those poles.
I wonder if we have any choice.
Look. Look there. In the lower left-hand corner of the wall.
What?
A face. I swear. It's a woman's face.
Where?
Through the ferns. Where? It's gone. It was the perfect outline of a woman's face.
They're on their way. They'll probably try to circle around us and cut us off.
They'll find us. They'll kill us.
We have got to keep going.
We can't get away from them. We can't.
Up ahead. Look. The birds. That's the spot I told you about.
We might find a way.
Oh, my spear. I'm hit.
No, help me. He's hurt. Past the tree. There it is. Lord, Marion, help me. We've got to help Jen. The den is right through those trees. Yes, you're right. We found the way. Help me,
drag, Maxwell. Take his arm. Hurry, please. We found it.
Oh, help us get there. Please help us.
Jim.
Marion.
We're coming through. We're here. Oh, help him. It's the phone man.
Here, in his back.
They're after us. The headhunters. Stop them. Do something.
There's one thing that might stop them. My camera's in the car. I'll be right back. Deathly afraid of this. I captured more than their souls when I took that picture 2 years ago.
Going back. They've seen you.
All right, you devils. I got your souls once before. I'll get them again.
They're disappearing.
Look. The whole photo mural just going. It's fading away every time you shoot.
I don't believe my eyes. I don't believe it.
The wall is white. There's not a trace of the mural left.
No one could explain what had happened. Had Elliot captured not only the souls of the natives, but the very soul of the jungle itself? Had the supposed bewitchment of the house brought it to life? Who can say? The mural is gone now, and so are Jim and Marion Sage. They put the house up for sale and bought a townhouse in the city. The last I heard, they still hadn't found a buyer. I happened by the house on Chimney Pot Lane a few weeks ago and peered through the windows. Curious. There was a pantry where I thought Jim and Marion had put in a breakfast nook, and one wall in the kitchen looked burned by a fire long ago. Well, perhaps they'll find a buyer soon. Any takers? Our cast included Marion Seldes, Terry Keene, Earl Hammond, and Sam Gray. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Radio Mystery Theater.
Good story. Good story. Thank you, good old Bob. I agree. And Foggs, you too. I agree. Good one. One of my...
I'm guessing we have one. Erie House Radio.
Okay.
Proudly resents a garrulous moral of the story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. When you buy a fixer-upper, the thing to remember the most, you can stop a door from squeaking and stop floorboards from creaking, but even Bob Vila can't rid you of a ghost.
There you go.
There you go.
Look, kiddies, cooler with the boom boom. The boom boom's fighting your gulati to death over there. Look, kiddies.
Cooler with the boom boom.
Cooler with the boom booms. And yeah. Cooler with the tigers there, yeah.
Pretty scary stuff. So,
interesting story. Not all Bob Duran's stories have, shall we say, a happy ending. If this was a happy ending, at least they got out, I guess. He doesn't always have stories with endings where you get out okay. So, yep.
But the dark mystery remains.
Yes.
Hey, look what I found in my pocket. It's a wooden nickel. I wonder if it'll work.
A wooden nickel. Good. That'll get bigger tomorrow.
Now, will you step back and just let me sing?
Okay, Dean. What are you going to... What number is it going to be?
Well, it's a romantic number, and I really ought to have a pretty girl to sing it to, you know, sort of get me in the mood.
I'll be a girl if you promise to respect me.
You won't be satisfied till you break my heart. You'll never satisfy till a teardrop starts. I try to shower you with love and kisses, but all I ever get from you is nagging, bragging, my poor heart is sagging. The way you toss my heart around, oh, crying shame. Well, I'll bet you wouldn't like it if I did the same. You're only happy tearing all my dreams apart. You won't be satisfied till you break my heart. Oh, you won't be satisfied till you break my heart. You're never satisfied till a teardrop starts. I try to shower you with love and kisses, but all I ever get from you is nagging and bragging, my poor heart is sagging. The way you toss my heart around, oh, crying shame. Well, I'll bet you wouldn't like it if I did the same. You're only happy tearing all my dreams apart. You won't be satisfied until you break my heart.
And we hope you join us tomorrow. Hopefully Gar will join us as well. If he's feeling better, and CW might be joining us, you just never know, as we come back tomorrow at 8:30 with Great Apes. Grape Ape. Murder at Midnight.
Grape Ape.
Great Ape. Murder at Midnight, the Ape song. Okay, why not? And then Dave found an interesting rendition of King Kong.
Gepper
yes,
is already King Kong. Different viewpoint. We're doing from King Kong's vision. How's that?
Yes.
No, that won't work. That won't
he
work.
Is the, yeah. The gorilla my dreams.
Okay, no wonder you don't sleep so well.
Yeah. Great movie. I have a wonderful... I don't know. I guess you'd say it's a coffee table book. It's not that big, like a giant one, but it's softbound. But it's the making of King Kong, with just all kinds of great stuff about how they made, you know, how Willis O'Brien made the ape come to life, how he mixed his animated models with the live actors with the means that they had at the in the 1930s. So. If you ever find a copy laying around in an old bookstore, get yours now. All right, we'll see you tomorrow night at 8:30. Thank you for joining us here at Erie House Radio, frantically searching for Vincent Price as he says goodnight once again.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And just
when next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Someone blow out that candle. There we go, Dave. Well, gang, if you came here for a nice, long, and interesting after party, you're out of luck. Dave and
yeah.
I are pretty much played out for the evening with various
yep.
things going on, so we are going to cut it short. And, Dave, if you're ready, we might as well just drag in the schnozola.
Yep, no way better way to end a good night was with schnoz.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Everybody happy.
Say but good night.
We've had a few laughs.
We
and
have.
It's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same. And it could think it do.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
It's over. How sad.
I feel better now.
He's so emotional. Good night, Dave.
Good night, Dale.